LexCoachMike here, LexCoachMike.com. Love you guys to death, man. Not much of an introduction here. Got back with Coach Jim Berkman today. Most of you know I'm a Berkman guy. Taught me 80% of everything I know. Any of my success is due to Berkman. Quickly, all-time winningest coach in NCAA history, going into his 31st season. 12-time national champions, 522 wins, 56 losses. I mean, what else do you need to know? The all-time winningest coach in NCAA lacrosse history. I love him to death. He's been great to me. I don't have much more to say, man. Let's just get into it.
Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Love you guys to death, but not as much as I love this coach. Got Coach Berkman back on with us before. Most of you know over the last, Coach, can you believe we've had Lex Coach Mike for 10 years? Incidentally, Coach Berkman was the very first coach ever on LexCoachMike.com. But it's funny, I get referred to as a Berkman protege, and you hear me refer to him, and I don't even know how many times he's been on, Coach. This is like the fourth time or maybe the fifth time over the 10 years, but I sure appreciate it. Please welcome Coach Berkman from the Fighting Gulls at Salisbury.
Mike, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
You know, I'm reminded of a story years ago. I was coaching a travel team, and I was in Florida. And that's when Kerwick was at Jacksonville. And he was, I guess, coaching the travel teams there, building a travel program. And we're warming up before the game, you know. And we're doing the C-cut shooting drill, Coach. Mm-hmm. And the three-man start with a split. We drive back, pass to the guy that's the fill, and the clear-out wing attackman pops back out, and we throw it to him. It's just a great way to get right-hand, left-hand touches. Goes real fast. We run on both sides in our pregame. And actually, we put our poles in that drill, too, incidentally, for pregame. But, you know, I'm standing off to the side, and this guy comes up to me, and he's standing to me shoulder to shoulder, and I didn't know who Kerwick was at the time. And this guy is, like, standing there like a shadow, and I'm going, what's up with this dude, you know? He's, like, the coach of the other team. He just comes and stands by me and, like, crosses his arms, right? And I look at him, and I said, hey, I'm, you know, Mike Newtzel, nice to meet you. And he said, Matt Kerwick, I can see you're a Berkman guy, huh? And never talked to him before, never saw my team play before, watched us warm up and knew that we were a Berkman team. Mm-hmm. How cool is that?
Yeah. Well, hopefully it was because of all the good things you were doing.
You know, and let's go ahead and get right into it. You know, I Coach asked me earlier for a list of things that I may want to talk about with him, and I think there's so many things, you know, and I've been blessed, man. I mean, you know, U.S. Cross Coach of the Year and SELC, SEC Coach of the Year, all that crap, so much of it is due to what I learned from you. And I think the biggest thing that separates our practices and the way we do things is the amount of time that we spend on shooting. And one of the things I learned from Coach Berkman was, you know, we actually replace almost all our passing drills, not all, but almost all our passing drills, all our stick work drills are variations of shooting drills, and every variation is a snapshot of something that we actually want to emulate in a game or run in a game, maybe with the exception of if we do a mumbo or something like that. But, yeah, man, our kids have a blast in practice. Kids want to play for us because the practices are so much fun, because we spend the first 15 or 20 minutes of a practice, and Coach knows, and the listeners know, you know, our big thing is getting every player 200 touches in the first hour of practice. That's a non-negotiable, you know, and we accomplish maybe 100 of those in the shooting drills that we run. So Coach Berkman, yesterday or the day before, sends me his practice plan in the week, helping me get prepared for the podcast, and sure enough, you know, what do I see? Shooting drills, shooting clearing drills, so on and so forth. I got you to thank for it, but can you talk just a second, Coach, about the philosophy of using so much time on the shooting drills and actually using it as a way to get touches in practice?
Well, I think that as the game has evolved and as we see in all the scores now, you know, we look and, you know, like last night, Carolina scores 4 goals in the last, 4 minutes of the game and ends up winning 11-10. You know, it's a one-goal game. There's a lot of one-goal games now. There's a lot of overtime games. There's a lot more parity in the game, And it's almost like, you know, the NFL, and it's any given Sunday, you know, with the top tiers of any of the divisions. And the games come down a lot of times, you know, to who shoots the ball a little bit better than the other team. And, you know, as the goalies get better and better, you know, we say to our guys, you know, you can't be a good shooter. You got to be a sniper now. And that's our objective, is to get, you know, six or seven kids that we consider to be snipers out there that can really shoot the ball accurately and shoot it very, very hard. And to do it, you know, in game-like conditions. So, you know, when you look at our practice plan for yesterday, a day after a game and 2 days before another game, you know, we had a pre-practice segment of 10 minutes where there was shooting going on, and then we had a practice segment, another segment of 10 or 15 minutes, you know, of shooting also, because we believe it's that important, more so than maybe, you know, almost anything that you do, is your ability to shoot the ball. And obviously, you know, it's the one thing, a proper repetition, you know, it improves dramatically over a course of a season. And so, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on, we spend a lot of time doing it. We do it a lot of different ways each day with a lot of different drills. But, you know, we want things to end in a shot, whether it's in our shooting drills or whether it's in our small-sided stuff, you know, where we're shooting shots and we're shooting them in realistic situations that would occur, you know, within the game.
Well, and I know, you know, working some camps with you, one of the things that I adapted from that was, you know, even with middle school kids or JV kids or high school kids, number one, the shooting drills that you get from Salisbury are, you know, not like a feed to a diagonal cutter, you know, kind of shooting drill or a star passing drill that ends up in a shot. They're actually snapshots of his offense, you know, and I'm real anxious to talk to you. I got to warn you, man, I didn't have this one on my list. But when you see one of the things I learned from you is, you know, we're driving, passing back to the mirror, we're doing whatever we have to do. I don't run a lot of diagonal cutters, so we don't have diagonal cutter shooting drills. You know, everything that I learned from you was multiple touches in the shooting drills, but they all emulated, you know, and we've talked before about some of the videos you had with Championship. You know, the man up video, I actually used those three or four drills out of your man up video as shooting drills at the beginning of practice. You know, and if you got a kid that doesn't have a large attention span, but, you know, you're getting hidden stick work in there. Maybe it's a split to a right-hand drive to a pass back, a left-hand pass to a right-hand catch to a right-hand shot if it's a three-man shooting drill, if your team can handle that kind of stuff at the high school level. But they're snapshots of the game, and the kids love it because we're getting them right-hand, left-hand touches, but they think it's a shooting drill. And it is a shooting drill, and we're getting the benefits of that shooting drill as well. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the shooting drills we call Barry, and it's, you know, it's part of our Barry offense where, you know, kid dodges the alley and the kid on the crease is popping straight up, you know, because the slides are coming from the crease against the team, and we're throwing the ball back, you know, to that pop-up guy, and then we're swinging it hard on a rope to the backside guy, you know, for a shot, you know, which is a lot of times when we're running that scenario out of our 2-2-2. Is the exact same thing you do in a game, but, you know, you practice it millions of times and throwing and working on step backs and throwing the ball across your body and getting the ball quickly on two passes that beats a fly to the backside, and then you're ended up with a rip, you know, to improve your shooting skills. That's much more what the game is about. You were passing and shooting, you know, versus a line drill where you're kind of doing stuff that's kind of irrelevant to the game.
Well, and I don't think the listeners know, you know, Coach was a soccer coach and a basketball coach many, many, many years ago, probably, but these things just run continuous motion, you know, and years ago I was so blessed, man. I had a pretty good travel team, and they ended up winning the Dick's Tournament of Champions, and I was being interviewed by Inside Lacrosse on their video afterwards, and the guy's going, "How many times do you practice? How do you run all those plays?" And my team is behind me, and they're obviously euphoric. I mean, a team from Georgia winning a national tournament like that, and the kids are all laughing. You know, we don't run plays. We run our shooting drills and our offense, you know, on the field. And it's no different, you know, coaches are going like, "I don't understand." You're going, "It's no different than a basketball coach shooting layups and pops and the same kind of things. It's no different than a wrestling coach shooting takedowns. It becomes almost like intuitive, right? And coaches that have trouble, and this is where I want to talk to you about this, but, you know, at the end of the day, for the last 5 or 6 years, I mean, up until the pairs, most of the guys were running, you know, some sort of whatever the definition of motion is. You know, and I always had a hard time coaching triangles or coaching this or coaching that. You know, in our shooting drills, like the C-cut drill I referred to, when that guy drives and the wing attackman is clearing through, we had him go past the pipe and then pop back out. You know, it becomes intuitive for the kids. And you know, we don't really have a playbook. I mean, sometimes you have a team that learns better if they see it written down, like when I was at Auburn. But, yeah, that memory of banging the ball quickly and telling the kids it doesn't matter, you know, how fast your shot is, if we can move those two passes really fast and get it to where we can shoot while the goalie's sliding across the crease on the, you know, coming strong side to weak side, whether it's up top going strong to weak or whether, you know, we're doing a drill where maybe we bang it through X and we have a variation to that as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's just followed up with the small-sided stuff where, you know, kids really learn how to, you know, create space and to get in the gaps and all the kind of things that we do in our small transition stuff, you know, so kind of one goes with the other, and it really teaches people how to play, you know, and so when a kid drives or makes a move, the people off ball, you know, just have the natural instincts to know how to create space because of, you know, the first two things that we do almost every day in practice, and that's, you know, 20 to 30 minutes of shooting and, you know, another 20 to 30 minutes of small-sided transition work.
Hey, Coach, do you put cones out? Like on the website, we just use a phrase because every coach kind of had his own phrase. But when Coach Berkman refers to small-sided stuff, he's talking about in tight 3v2 or 4v3. So that's kind of his nomenclature. Do you do a lot where you put the cones or the hash marks out and use like a 15x10 area in your 3v2s?
We don't put a lot of cones out when we're doing those drills. I mean, we use the cones when we're doing the shooting drills. I mean, if we're going to dodge the alley, we're going to throw back, I'll create a C down there that the kid has to get from the front of the C to the back of the C, you know, on his throwback, so he's not just, you know, haphazardly running down there and throwing the ball across the body. He's really stepping hard away, you know, and I might put cones at the starting point of the lines. Or I might...
When you run your 3v2, do you ever run it in like a 10 or a 20-foot or 20-yard confined space in tight?
We've done it in the past, you know, just using the circle of a soccer circle, and you put the goal on the soccer circle in the middle of the field, and, you know, the lines come in from just outside it, and it's in a really tight space. You know, we've done that before. But on a daily basis, you know, we're not coning off a really small area, per se. You know, we're playing in a really small area, but we don't cone it off.
That's interesting. On the website, I think, you know, things go in cycles, right, and copycats and blah, blah, blah. But with all the influx of the quote-unquote Canadian box style of lacrosse, we interview a lot of coaches that have gone to confining the space in those drills. And then we also interview coaches that are not in favor of that, even though it encourages maybe an 8-yard, 60-mile-an-hour pass. You know, everything is in so tight and confined. And those coaches then say when the guys are in a normal offensive situation, it looks like, you know, they've got all kinds of room because they're used to playing in tight. But we also interview coaches that don't do that intentionally because they think it inhibits spacing and where the guys should be. You know, it's kind of one of the cool things about the website is there's no right or wrong, right? I mean, but you get to hear different opinions from different coaches on how they're modifying some of those drills.
You know, everybody has a way to skin their own cat, and, you know, there's no right or wrong way, you know, but, you know, we're always looking for a way to do things a little bit better. You know, every day we're trying to get better, and, you know, one of the things we've done, we've got 4 new drills we're using this year that have kind of met needs that our kids really like, and, you know, because we're always trying to get better and find a better way to get more touches, and another way to probably do the same thing But to create some variety in your drills so the kids don't get, you know, get content or don't get excited because they're doing the same things all the time.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. Coach knows, we run a trap a lot of places on our clears, so we have to, we might practice the trap for 8 minutes in a box, in a half field, in a quarter field, every day, just because the timing on the trap is so huge. One guy comes, takes away the outside shoulder, we put the guy in like a V and we rake the stick down. But other than that, another thing I learned from Coach, and I hate to sound like, I worship him, but I really do. If you want to keep the attention of the kids, you got to change the drills up, man. So we never run the same drill 2 days in a row. And if the kids don't get the drill, we tell them it's okay, this is a new drill. We're probably not going to get it 100% today. We come back to it in 2 or 3 days. We don't run that drill for 20 minutes. How long are you running your drills, Coach? I think somewhere in my memory it's like 7 to 10 minutes a drill. Is that accurate?
I would say that, when we're doing stuff small-sided at the beginning of practice, if you look at the practice plan that you have in front of you from yesterday, when we did the 3-on-2 and the 4-on-3 seagull drill, which is a new drill that we got here, we didn't do the seagull drill yesterday, we did traditionals, we were only doing 3-on-2s for, 4 minutes and 4-on-3s for 4 minutes, and then boom, we were to the next drill, and then it was 5-on-4 for 4 minutes and 6-on-5 step off, for 6 minutes. The variety, but most drills will never do much more than 10 minutes.
Yeah, so tell me about one of the new ones, Coach.
Well, there's four things that we've done this year, and the first drill that we do, like yesterday, we did one-on-ones to 3-on-2s, where we have four lines on the perimeter, one up top, one on the right wing, one on the left wing, one behind. You start at, a different line each time, and on offense, when you start, wherever point you start, let's say we start at the top, the offensive player has the ball, and then the two adjacent offensive players on the wing are in. Defensively, there's four lines too. The guy starts up top on the ball, and then the defense always plays opposite. So the guy behind would come and be the backup for the defender. But we play it out real hard one-on-one. But the guy that's backing him up is a slide guy. And so you got to dodge with your head up. Because at any time a slide could come, once the guy's beat, and you go to score. And once the slide comes, or you draw the slide, you bang the ball, and then the drill automatically then becomes a 3-on-2. And the theory is that, hopefully we get two passes, so we can, two passes is the key to beating a slide, that we bang the ball hard once, and then bang the ball hard the second time, and we get a dunk. Then we start, right as soon as that's over, boom, the whistle blows and the guy goes from the wing. The guy up top on offense and the guy behind are in adjacent. If he dodges up top hard from the wing, that guy, clears through and creates space. The guy behind at X is trying to hang him, hang his defender or the backup guy a little bit so he doesn't know where he is. And then we play. So we play hard one-on-one, so we're really lurking on our one-on-one moves on offense, but we're also working on our one-on-one moves realistically. Unlike just playing one-on-one where there is a backup. So you got to learn to dodge with your head up. You got to learn to dodge and re-dodge because, a lot of teams are fake sliding now and just showing and then recovering. And then defensively, we're teaching guys how to push guys to certain spots. We're teaching them how to slide accordingly. And then you get your transition at the end of the drill. So that's how we're doing our one-on-ones now. Basically, when we need to work on individual defense and sliding.
Coach, where are the lines for the poles in this?
So there's four lines. There's a line of offense and defense up top, a line of offense and defense on each wing, and a line of offense and defense, behind the cage.
Are you integrating middies into the D side of that?
Yes, they can play defense too and take their turns on defense.
I love it.
So that's the first drill. And then we just carry it one step farther. We'll play 2-on-2 now. So now we can integrate the picks and the slips and that kind of stuff. And now wherever we start up top, whenever we start in this drill, 2-on-2 to 4-on-3, every offensive player is in. So you have four guys. And now defensively, you have the ball guy on, and then you have back right and back, you have the two adjacents in. And, you know, we'll start it maybe with a pass down, pick down, they pay a pick and slip, all of a sudden there's an advantage, and then boom, a slide comes in the kid's face from the crease, and then they got to move the ball, you know, and score, and it becomes a 4-on-3. And you can do picks and slips, you can work on your two-man game, you can pick at the goal line when the ball's behind. So you work on your picking game and defending picks, but you also work on your offensive game. And then, at some point in that 2-on-2, there becomes an advantage, and a slide's got to come to stop the goal. And then once the slide comes, we bang the ball and we play just like realistically in a game. You know, you're in offense and you're doing something in your two-man game, and all of a sudden the guy gets an advantage. Hard slide comes from the crease. You got to make a play, and hopefully it's two passes that beat that slide, and then you get a shot, And so those are the ways we've been doing our 1-on-1s and 2-on-2s. This year, and we really like the drills. Our guys really like it because it's extremely competitive. You're going real hard in front of everybody, and you're trying to beat somebody, but then you're also got to dodge with your head up, and because a slide's going to come. It's not like you can just beat somebody in a 1-on-1 or 2-on-2 drill and there's nobody there. And so it makes it really realistic to what happens in your half-field offense.
Yeah, I was listening to the last podcast, and, you were integrating, at that time, you were doing a fair amount of 5v5 work to get a crease guy, O&D, involved in the drill versus maybe a 4v4 or something, okay? Are you still staying with the... The 5v5s is a big part of your practice plans during the week?
Yeah, a couple times a week for about 8 minutes, we do 5v5, and then we script it. Probably the biggest portion of the script is that we're doing a quick slide drill, where the defense is really sliding quickly to everything so that they work on rotations and recoveries. But it is also, it's mainly an offensive drill because it's really teaching our kids to move the ball quickly. And to get to gaps and to get to space. And every time the slide's a little different and the passes are a little bit different, so they really got to move the ball. They got to dodge with their head up. And it's really helped us against some of the quicker sliding teams that we do that. But we also script it, where we say, it's a mix. Hey, today's 55 mix drill. So when the guys come out on defense, the defensive coach will say, hey, we're not sliding all this time, or hey, we're only sliding quick to the short stick, or hey, we're only going to slide quick to Corey. We're going to play everybody slow. We're going to be slow to go to everybody else, and so we'll put some different scenarios in that 5-on-5.
And I love that idea.
Yeah. So we call that 55 mix. Now the other two drills that I'm really excited about is two drills that we started about probably a month ago, and I was thinking, and we had a few games and. We had turned the ball over on our ride several times, and it just seemed like we weren't getting anything out of it. We'd turn it over, and our tacklemen weren't sprinting to their spots, and, I think they were almost too scripted, in some of the drills that they almost start or real close to the spots they're supposed to be, at the end of those things. But, when you turn it over at the ride and the ball's up near midfield, you got to get to your spots. So we took, two goals, and we put a goal in the normal crease, and we put a goal midfield. And we put three offensive lines at midfield and three offensive lines at the goal line. And then we put a D-line on one side of the top of the box and a D-line on the top other side of the top of the box. And there's a coach in the middle on each side. And he rolls the balls towards one end of the offensive guys, and they come down, and the two defensive guys come into the game, and it becomes a 3-on-2. And then they go down and shoot, boom, they're out, and then we roll the ball the other way, and now we're going back the other way. It's kind of a version of a West Jenny drill, but everybody's not playing. We're not wasting time with the D guys right now playing offense. All right? We're working on our O guys getting to the spots that they need to get where they don't. It's not a perfect world every time. A ground ball goes to the middle guy, a ground ball goes to the outside guy, And so they come from different spots, and they got to sprint down to the other end and get into their spots. Not a long ways, because it's only, You know, it's only, what, 40 yards total. And we play, you know, for 5 minutes or 6 minutes, 3-on-2, 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 3-on-2. But it's the O guys doing the offense, and it's the D guys doing the defense. Now, we put the D middies on in there on offense, too, and some of the, you know, but we don't mess around with the long sticks in this drill. We do West Jenny, you know, once a week for warm-up. Our D guys get to get play in that drill and there. But in this drill, it's more, it's specifically for our offensive guys in the transition D middies. And then we just take it one step farther now, but in a little different scenario where we have two offensive lines on each side, and we have an offensive line at the top of the box on each side also. And then we have a D line besides the top of the box. We have a D line, one D line at each end. So we start to drill. The two old guys come in from the end line, we'll say, from the goal line, and the two guys come in from the middle, and then they're going towards the other goal. And then you have your three D guys, two in the middle and one from the far goal coming in, and now it's a 4-on-3. And again, it's a continuous 4-on-3, 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 4-on-3. But they got to get to their spots. And everything is like, it seems like every time they come down, it's like a little bit different because of the way the ball's picked up. The ground ball was to a different person. So it's not like a lot of times in your small-sided stuff where, you know, hey, the ball starts here and it's boom, 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 and it's always the same. So they had to react accordingly, you know, to getting to spots. They had to react to where the defensive guy picked them up if it was in a different spot. And we call those our 32 and 43 seagull drills. Now, because that was a drill that I made up, so we call it the seagull 32 and the seagull 43 drill.
So, Coach,
and our guys really like that.
I'm sorry, man. Are the poles? They're not coming in from the wings. You actually have them on like the body of the field for that drill.
No, they're coming in from the corners of the box.
That's my question.
Or just, you know, somewhat on the top of the box. They're out wide, you know, they're out kind of wide. So when they come in, you know, depending on who gets that ground ball, it's different on each time who's going to pick the ball up. Just like it is in a real game. If you turn the ball over in a ride, well, you know what? It's not the same if, you're practicing 4-on-3s and the same point guys every time. It's a different guy at the point each time, a different guy's on the backside each time. You know, they're picking up at different spots. So it makes it more realistically for them of some of the turnovers that happen, you know, in the middle of the field. They create, you know, a little different scenario than the normal, hey, this is the 4-on-3 drill.
You have two lines of D on one side and one on the other, or do you have four lines and just decide which side is going to bring in two and which side is going to bring in one?
Yeah. The two guys in the middle always come in, one from the top of the box on one side and one top of the box on the other side. And wherever end the offensive guys came from, the opposite end defender at that goal line comes in.
Oh, cool.
And okay. So, you know, you have two guys that are kind of up top, so one of them's got to rotate the ball and one of them's got to get down low, too. So that makes them move and think accordingly also. Really love the drill. Guys really like it. It's fast-paced, and it's just a different ways to do some of your transition drills so that, you know, between that and the four or five other drills that we do in tight space, 4-on-3s, 3-on-2s, you know, we really don't have to really do any one drill, you know, more than once a week because there's a lot of variety between those four or five drills that really create this, you know, accomplish a lot of the similar things.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it to death. Hey, can I change subjects on you here a little bit?
Just fire away, Mike. You've been known to do that.
You know, on obviously Salisbury's unbelievable team. Obviously, you know, coach has more wins than anybody in the world, anybody in NCAA history. But, a lot of the stuff is driven off of, or at least my experience with you, is driven off guys clearing through, creating space for the Dodger, almost regardless of where he is. And I'm referring back to, you know, shooting drills that I took out of your man up video, which of all the videos you've done is still my favorite. I don't even know if mine plays anymore. It's been played so many times and given away so many times and returned so many times. But anyway, you know, now you're seeing, you know, all these variations of the pairs, you know. and the exchange between the attackman and the driving middie coming down. I mean, Ohio State, Marquette, although the Marquette is probably, you know, some of Bates' old stuff, but it just seems so different than what I had learned from you. Are you playing around with that pairs exchange, or are you running your traditional stuff that's been so successful for you for so many years?
Well, we've got our own version of both of those things, and we do it in two different ways. I mean, we run a little scramble offense that we call a scramble, you know, where we're guys dodging towards the wing, and as he's running that way, he's also passing the ball to the guy on the wing, and at the same time as he's catching the ball, that guy's following his pass, you know, and we're doing a two pick and slip on the, you know, the corner of the box. That's a version of the two-man game. You know, there's an opportunity for the guy to drive off the pick and get to the middle of the field. There's an opportunity to slip and do a pick and slip and get something off a two-man game. Guy comes to the middle, nothing, boom, he goes right to the other wing with a pass and followed by a pick. So that's one version of the two-man game or the Canadian game that we run. And then, you know, we do run that 42, you know, pairs kind of thing that Syracuse runs, you know, in a version of what Duke does, you know, where each guy's paired off and they dodge accordingly and react to where that guy is doing. So, I mean, it's in our repertoire, and we use it. We definitely use the scramble pretty consistently, or versions of the scramble where we dodge from the wing in a 14, and you know we go to X banging up the backside, and as that guy catches the ball, boom, the guy from the top has already come over, created a pick and slip and an opportunity, created space up top for a dodge to the middle of the field, but from the wing. And then, you know, the slides, he can see the field better than if he's dodging downhill, per se.
No, man, I love it. And how do you rep that, Coach, when you start to do your – is that in your 5v5, or are you doing that in a 6v6, or you start with it in skeleton? I mean, how do you introduce
it? Again, everything we do here kind of goes back to the shooting drills.
Right.
So one of our shooting drills is pick and slip, where we got two.
Should I not have known the answer to that question before I even ask it? I apologize for being so stupid.
Yeah, so it starts back in the shooting drills where we do picks and slips on the corners and shoot. So we pick and slip, and we're working on that little touch pass or lever pass and throwing the ball to the kid's face mask, and we're working on getting rid of the shot real quick. And it's a continuous pick and slip drill. And then it kind of goes into, you know, the transition stuff. So if we're, you know, so everything we do in our offense is kind of built into three things. So it starts with a shooting, then it goes into a small-sided scenario. So, you know, one day we might be doing three-on-twos, but it always has to start with a pass-down, pick-down, and there's a pick and slip in that, you know. Or if we're going to the one-on-one, now we're going to the two-on-two, four-on-three drill. Hey, we're scripting it today, you know, you get, every time in the two-on-two, there's got to be a pick, either up screen, down screen, or whatever you're going to do. And then it goes to the small side of defensive segment, 4-on-4 today. Well, 4-on-4 today, we're going to run out of a diamond, and we're going to run our scramble offense in the 4-on-4. So the guy's going to pass to the wing, and if he follows his pass, he's going to pick and slip, which is the scramble. Get to the middle, nothing, he'll pass it to the other wing, pick and slip again. So now, you know, we've taken it in the three scenarios. The shooting drill, we practiced it. We practice it in the transition segment, and then we practice it again in our small-sided 4-on-4 segment or 5-on-5. We've done other things that leads right into, you know, now we don't have to, you know, when we go to 6-on-6, we don't have to teach it. They've been doing it in the other three things.
And that's why I'm a Berkman protege and proud of it.
So, yeah, so we try to incorporate all that stuff within what we're doing, so you know, it's concepts and everything kind of lead from one to the next, and you're not reinventing the wheel as you're moving through practice.
Coach, I'm looking at the stats, man. 50 shots a game. I mean, we've known each other 10 years. I don't remember seeing you at 50 shots a game before. I mean, I understand, you know, it was always a lot, you know, like 41, 43, 44. Is this as many shots as you've been taking with this team?
Well, I think, you know, I think that's a little uncommon for us, you know, but I think on the same token, you know, we have a special face-off guy who's winning at a clip that's been unheard of. So we have the ball a lot more. That leads to more shots, obviously. I don't think we're really playing any different, but I think we got a pretty special first midfield line that's kind of unique. You got a lefty Canadian type of kid who's, you know, he's got a boatload of goals. He's a great shooter, can drive real hard off the wing, and he can get his shot pretty much on his own. You got a very elusive 6'3", lengthy 185 kid up top that plays like that guy that's the jitterbug who can always generate a shot or a slide, and he's a great feeder. And then you got a 6'4", 205-pound kid that can rip it with both hands, who can doesn't run by anybody, but he gets into people and knocks them off their line a little bit and can turn either way and shoot it. So, you know, you haven't had, I don't think in a while, three guys on the first midfield that all could really generate their own shot pretty easily or create a slide. So I think that's led to shooting a little bit quicker because they can get shots a little bit quicker than maybe some of our past teams. You know, last year was a little struggle. We were grinding to get shots. Now it's almost like, hey, let's not take that first shot. You know, it might be good, but we want a great one because we can get a shot pretty easy. And we're going to get the ball back, you know, because we got a face-off guy. I think that's led to, you know, shooting the ball a little bit more than in past years.
And you got to love the man-up percentage, 53.8. I mean, Coach Berkman has a lot of teams that are, over the years, that are 45, 48. I'm not sure I remember seeing close to 54% on man-up. But
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. It was an interesting thing happened last week, and I had never seen this, and I'm not a big stat guy. I don't, you know, hover over the stats for hours and hours like some people. But I looked at our man-up at the end of the game, and we were 7-for-6. And I said, I've never seen that in a stat before, because they had a 2-minute penalty, I think a non-releasable, and I think we scored 3 goals, or we might have scored 4 goals in 2 minutes, because we just kept, it was make it, take it, we got it right back, and boom, I think we scored 3 or 4 goals in a 2-minute period, which allowed us, you know, in that one penalty to score 3 or 4 goals, and I never seen ever remember seeing a stat like that before.
Oh man, when you're 2-man... when you're up for 2 minutes and you got your face-off guy, that's a recipe for good stuff, man.
Yeah. So it was a good day. Hopefully that continues.
Clearing percentage, 86.5. How do you feel about that?
Our clearing's down a little bit this year. And I'm not quite sure why. Other than that we're pretty young on defense. You know, we have 2 sophomores starting and we lost one of them about 4 or 5 games ago to a season-ending injury, and he was our best cover guy, so we've had to overcome that. But we've just made a couple mistakes, you know. But the other day we were 24-for-25. Even in the York game, we were 24-for-27, I think. So we've been clearing a little bit better recently. But, you know, we definitely want to be in that 94-95%. You know, we've always kind of been there. We've just been real good at clearing. Our goalies, it maybe been a factor in it. They don't. The stick skills are maybe quite as good as maybe a couple years ago. But you know, last couple games they've cleared pretty well.
Love it. Love it to death. So you were talking about the parity in the game, but man, it still looks like those top 5 or 6 programs, you know, at D3 are going to be back again. Is that fair?
Yeah, but I would also say that the next 5 or 6 are a lot better than they've been too. You know, I think right now there's obviously in the north, you know, there's 4 or 5 really, really good NESCAC teams, you know, that have had really good seasons. And unlike past years, you know, their 4th and 5th teams have had, you know, really good seasons out of conference, too. You know, Williams is having, you know, one of their best seasons in a long, long time and has had good success out of conference. You know, so their depth probably is rivaled by no other conference. but, you know, in the Liberty League's got, you know, I would say three or four really outstanding teams. The Centennial with Gettysburg, your sign is having a great year. Dickinson, solid year. And F&M having a good year is four really good teams. You know, our conference doesn't have the depth of some of the other conferences, but, you know, last week when we played York, it was a 1-3 in the country showdown. So we have two of the best teams. So in the ODAC, you know, I think it's pretty much a two-man show this year with WNL and Lynchburg. So, you know, there's, I would say, 11, 12 teams that could put a real interesting take on in the playoffs, you know, with a win here or a win there that wouldn't be a surprise to the coaches that are coaching every day, even though it might be a surprise to the outsider. Hey, how did this 12th or 14th team beat that third or fourth team? You know, I think all those teams are that good if they get hot goalie play, and you know, that some of those things could definitely happen, you know, this year.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what, man. I think it's awesome, and I think with the influx of the TV and the screaming, streaming. I'm sorry. I think there's good stuff available, but man, they need to show more of these games, you know, live streamed.
Yeah, all the schools do a pretty good job now of streaming. I know that we do. We put a lot of emphasis on it for our contingencies, but you know, we have replays. We have two broadcasters, slow-mo, you know, it's not any different if you're watching a professionally broadcast game than when you watch our streams. A lot of schools aren't up to that level yet, but there is several in D3 that, you know, really do a great job, and you can pretty much, I mean, my wife's always upset with me because virtually every night, almost a week now, you can watch a lacrosse game on, you know, on my ESPN app, you know, last Syracuse, Carolina, my ESPN app. So I watch a lot. I watch a lot of things, picking up certain things. Just always trying to learn a new way to do things. You know, there's nothing better than watching a good lacrosse, two good teams play, and seeing what they're doing, and maybe find a, you know, just a little niche within your offense or your defense or how they're sliding, you know, that can make you a better team.
It's wonderful for me, man, because a half of a game is about 50 minutes on the elliptical.
Yeah.
So just like you said, man, ESPN app. Coach, I'm not aware, and I feel stupid. How do I get to watch the streams of your games?
So just like any teams, you just go to the website, you look at your you pull up their schedule, and right next to the schedule, it'll have, right on the right, it'll have an icon, you know, for video. And you just hit the video link, and boom, you're in.
On the Salisbury link, on the Salisbury site, it's got that?
Yeah, so if you go right into our website,
I go to your website every week just to see how you're doing, because I love you so much. But yeah, okay.
And all you got to do is go to the right of the thing, and it'll have a link there to, you know, for the broadcast, and you can just click it, and then boom, you're in and you're watching. I mean, tomorrow 11 o'clock, we play our first round of CAC tournament. You know, we play at 11 tomorrow, and you can click the link and watch the goals tomorrow at 11 a.m.
And are they saved on there? I mean, if I don't watch it live, can I go back and watch it on the stream off the schedule page on your website?
Some schools you can, but ours you can't. You got to watch live.
Got to watch live. Okay. Well, I will make a point to do that.
So.
Coach, I want to be respectful of your time. We still got Laxon at the beach, right?
Yeah, we got the OC Lax camp the week of the 4th of July. We have it's a 4-day camp with the 4th off. We go 10 to 3, probably have 12, 14 players down there working with the kids from the Seagulls, teaching the Seagull way. A lot of the parents like to bring their kids over and drop them off at 9:45 and go to the beach and come back and pick them up at 3 o'clock. And they get a lot of great instruction. They have a fun time there right at OC Park. You can find that camp on the Ocean City Recreation website. It's probably the best bang for the buck of any camp that's left in the country, because it's run by the Recreation Department. And then we have our 4 or 5 prospect camps, which you can find right on our website under Seagull Academy.
On the website, it looks almost like academics, but click on it and it'll take you there. The writing is a little bit squished. And when I was preparing for the podcast, I was going back looking for the Seagull Lacrosse Academy stuff, which they run quarterly, generally June, August, October, and February. And I'm going, Seagull Academics, I'm looking for Academy. And I clicked on it, and it took me right where I needed to go. So,
yeah, so it's in the upper right-hand corner of our website, the Seagull Academy. We run basically a four-hour prospect camp with an hour and a half of doing our drills. It's like a practice. They start out with the shooting, they go small-sided, and then they do some full-field transition drills, and then, boom, we're scrimmaging for 2.5 hours after, so we get to see a player play for, you know, for 4 hours. And the next one is that first weekend in August, and then we'll have one in October, and then another one in February will be the next three, you know, coming through.
Yeah.
The one in August is a good one for guys who are trying to make, you know, sophomores and juniors, because it's kind of, it's in a dead period. It's after all the summer travel teams are done, and it's before the fall football and soccer starts. So that's a real good one to come to for somebody that's, you know, especially going into their junior year or even going into their senior year and still is really searching for the right place.
You run those at the new facility, right?
Yeah, they're right on the stadium field. They pick up their lockers. They pick up their jerseys right in the brand-new Seagull locker room. And then they go right out in the stadium field for 4 hours.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, how did I do on my podcast, Coach?
Are we off now?
We're still on. Well, you were going to be honest with me.
No, it's all good, Mike. You always have a lot of questions, and you always pull out something that, you know, that wasn't discussed beforehand, so... But all good. You do a great job. Love what you do for the game, and appreciate you having me on.
So 10 years ago, you know, most of the listeners know, you know, I'm an author. I write books on Gen X and millennials and in real life, and do leadership work. And Matty McGinnis, I think, facilitated me going down to work with some of the staff at Salisbury. I don't know when it was. It had to be 10 years ago, man. And in the process of all that, you know, I got to spend a lot of time with Coach and Maddie. And I told him, I said, I got this idea. You know, the speaker business is in the tank in that period of the economy. And, you know, I never went to IMLCA until Coach told me that's where I needed to go. And I was so impressed with the honesty of the coaches. You know, that's before there was even concurrent sessions, and it was much smaller back then. But at the end of the day, we were sitting talking, and I'm saying, okay, I have this idea, man. I want to emulate IMLCA on the internet. And Coach refers to me as highlighter oftentimes. If I knew the listeners better, I would tell you why. But and I said, hey, I got this idea, man. There's 4,000 programs. I want to emulate, you know, the IMLCA conference on the internet, you know. And I said, I got a business plan, and there's 4,000 programs, and California's nuts, and Texas is nuts, and the Pacific Northwest is nuts, and Chicago and Ohio were already pretty mature at that time. Man, there's great players coming out of Wisconsin now too, Coach, and Minnesota especially. And I said, you know, I've always considered you a friend, and we have a personal relationship. And I said, I'm thinking about doing this thing on the internet called Lax Coach Mike, blah, blah, blah. And you remember what you told me?
Vaguely.
You told me I didn't have a chance in hell.
Mm.
And I said, why? You know, and you said, because out of those 4,000 programs, there's only 500 coaches that have the passion that you have. And a lot of them at the high school and middle school level and whatnot are collecting checks and aren't willing to learn to get better. And your prophecy turned out to be true. I think the first year we had like 25 free members of Lax Coach Mike, but I was getting a hell of an education myself, you know. Now we got 160 hours of podcasts and in the library and all that stuff. And, you know, ultimately it kind of came around. It's we got 9,000 free members now, Coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it's hard for me to keep up with. But without you and your influence on me, there wouldn't be a Lax Coach Mike. So thank you very much. Continued success. I'll give you a chance to hammer me in a second, but I'm not going to do it on the air, man. So So please, please, please go to the Salisbury website. Check out the Seagull Lacrosse Academy. Go to Ocean City's rec site. Check out Laxon on the Beach, where after 10 or 12 years, I have never been invited to come and coach, but I'm getting over it slowly but surely at age 62. And, Coach, love you to death, man. Stay on the line with me. I'm going to sign off. Unless you got any parting shots you want everybody to hear, take them now.
No, all good, Mike. Just appreciate, again, everything you do for the game and helping coaches get better. You know, at Salisbury, we're all about getting better today.
Well, and you know, that's the key, isn't it? I mean, coaches think that these great, successful coaches have their system and the way they do things. And having interviewed, you know, D1 coaches, D2 coaches, D3 coaches, national championship coaches, I mean, one of the things I've learned is that every time I do a podcast, things have shifted. You know, and in this podcast, you listen to a coach that's got more wins than any coach in NCAA lacrosse history talking about, hey, man, I had to design a couple of drills because I thought we needed to change to accomplish this. And, you know, the biggest common denominator with successful coaches is they're always looking for new ideas and ways to put their kids in a position to be successful and doing things the right way, man, and you've done that, so... Hey, I'm going to sign off. This is Lax Coach Mike. Stand in line, Coach. Lax Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com. Until next time, everybody, remember, you got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of your young people. Take it very seriously every day. Don't go to practice without a plan, man. Don't run the same drills every day. Get creative and hold yourself to the same standard in learning and getting better that you hope you can hold your players to. Until next time, everybody, this is Lax Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com.